Hi, this is Jerry Stiller. You are listening to WBAI New York 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Where are my keys? Anybody see my keys? Who took my keys?
The bells of hell go ting-a-ling-a-ling for you, but not for me. Oh, death, where is thy sting-a-ling-a-ling, or grave thy victory? If you meet the Undertaker or the young man from the crew, have a pint with what's left over. Now I say goodbye to you. For the bells of hell go ting-a-ling-a-ling for you, but not for me. Oh, death, where is thy sting-a-ling-a-ling, or grave thy victory?
Good afternoon, New York City. And I've always wanted to say this. Live from Dublin, Ireland, it's Radio Free Era. That's right. I got into Dublin about 4 this morning, and on the other line is St. Malachy McCourt, the patron saint of atheists, who managed to get out of the hospital, but he's in a rehab upstate. Of when I went to visit him, he was telling me, we have listeners up in this rehab, Malachy.
Yes, we do, John. And give my regards to Bla Clea, which is the Gaelic for Dublin. Bla Clea. And have they welcomed you as usual?
Well, I tell you who's welcomed me is Donald Trump. I went to bed right away at the hotel here in Dublin at 4 in the morning. And I get up. It's nothing but Donald Trump. He made a speech in South Carolina stating, now get this, that if any European country doesn't pay up into NATO, 2% of their GDP, he's asking his muscle man, Russia, to invade that country. He says, I couldn't care less. You don't pay up. So Europe is freaking out now at the moment. They are freaking out that if Trump gets in, he's giving carte blanche to Russia. Just pick and choose. Oh, Poland, you didn't pay? We're going in. Hungary, you didn't pay? We're going in. I mean, this is crazy what's going on here, Malachy. But they're also playing clips of Biden talking about how the president of Mexico has to open up the Rafa gates. I mean, Malachy, we live in the insane asylum, and it's like one of these things, when you live in it, you don't even know you're in an insane asylum. It's only when you get out of the insane asylum. So I'm sitting here watching TV, and I'm going, we live in an insane asylum.
Cuckoo time, John.
Yeah, oh. Malachy, I am just telling you that the coverage that we get over here on TV, it is unbelievable, man. Oh my
God! Well, it is the 49th state Ireland is.
Well, it's not. Well, I see. Here's the thing: Ireland's not part of NATO, but it's the NATO countries. And to see with Trump, there's always an element of truth. That we kick in the most out of all of NATO, and we're not in Europe. Yeah. And these countries like to say, well, you know what? If America's going to send their troops there, we don't need to do it. So, you know, but to say that I couldn't care less if Russia goes into anybody that doesn't pay. I mean, like, it is just, we live in a nut house, Malachy. I escape for a couple of days, that's all. I'll be back.
Well, I tell you, just get some information about how nuts live.
Yeah, well, especially. But Malachy, I just wanted to take care of a few announcements before maybe we get into what life is like in upstate New York. I want to send condolences out to the family of James Irsay, who used to engineer for us, and you know, and I've been hearing all the tributes to him. A real gentleman. What you heard Irsay on the radio, that was him off the radio. Just a real, very calm, very nice guy. And it's just, I think it came to a shock, you know. And, of course, everything comes in a freaking email. You know, sad to announce, you know, that he's that. So That goes, condolences going out. And one of the reasons I'm over here is I'm writing a script with David Gilney here in Dublin about what Bainbridge Avenue in the Bronx used to be like in the late 80s and 90s. And it's going to be a fictionalized account, and it's going to be about the crazy time up there, about living the Irish that were living up on Bainbridge Avenue. And our guest today, maybe you haven't noticed it, but I've noticed it over here. That's all they're talking about is the Super Bowl. So we have our resident bookie, born in Cork, Billy O'Connor, came to the Bronx at a very early age, joined the fire department, and he had a side hustle. It was called being a bookie. So he's written about it, called Confessions of a Bronx Bookie. He used to keep book as a side hustle in the South Bronx. So Billy's going to tell us how WBAI can make money. You know how you, Maliki, we used to say you can bet the farm on it? Well, we're going to bet the station. We do a lot of things here. Can you send money in? Don't worry about that. We're going to send it in either on KC or the 49ers. So Billy is going to tell us in which direction to go. And then we're going to replay a story that was told at QED in Astoria, of which we've partnered up with QED and the Fortune Society and with WBAI, that we're going to play a story a week that we're doing called From the BQE to QED. And this is going to be Marian Fontana. She's going to tell a story about love, loss, dating, Cats's Deli, and it's a riveting story. And if you want to come to our next event, it's going to be on March 14th. That's a Thursday. We're on the second Thursday of every month, 7:30 to 9. Maureen Lagan, she was just on America's Got Talent. Her father was a garbage man in the South Bronx. She's got a play about that, daughter of a garbage man. She is going to be there. Annie Lancelotto, hey, she's back from Ireland, and she's going to come and tell a story on that Thursday. Brendan Fay, who lives right up the block from QED, will be telling a story about the St. Pat's for All parade. And Marcia Lachlan will be, she's a nurse in Queens, and she'll be telling us how to date a drug addict. So as you can see, get your tickets early, because we've been selling out every show. And the way you could do it, and you could do it right now, is QEDAstoria.com for March 14th.
And John, it is that people have a habit of procrastinating about getting tickets and all that. And I think that it should be known that seating is extremely limited. And that
it is.
You have
to get in
there or you don't. And so,
yeah, and it's only 50, 60 tickets, and it's for the price of a pint, because we can't mention that. So if you happen to partake in certain bars, not Manhattan, forget about Manhattan, then Manhattan would be $15, $20, but a reasonable pint in Queens can get you into this show. But Maliki, I want to get back to you. I was up during the week visiting you, as I say, in an undisclosed location in upstate New York. So how are you doing there in the rehab? I know it's good to get out of the hospital, because there's certain things that could go wrong in the hospital with the strep and getting infections and stuff like that. But how are you faring up at this rehab place? And it's not for alcohol or drugs. This is physical rehab.
Yes, it is. I'm in the room here with one other person. So it's very cozy and comfortable and spacious as well. And there's a very nice view of trees and all sorts of greenery out there. The conditions are quite good. We have some PT. There's a whole lot of equipment here in the gym place. So, you know, lifting legs and jumping around the place. And it's getting me out and getting me out of bed, and I see the ceiling every day. But it's all very, it's funny how all that physical exercise, then of course it goes for, you have to have your nap as well. And And by then you get to bed early and you get up early, and it's, yeah, so there we are. It is called, not called gym for nothing. So
Maliki, you were telling me there's three people in the rehab that are listeners and tracked you down. They didn't know that you were there.
Oh, that's right. That was my acid. Yeah, I was the staff, and they said, "Oh, loved you on the show," as I was passing by. I was wondering, where the hell is this coming from? "Love your radio show with your friend."
Wow.
Then they pushed me right into the gym, and off we go kicking again. So that was amazing to me that they were actually putting the ears of this our show every Sunday at 11 a.m. It's an astonishing thing, but it's also, I mean, it is in a sense like. In a sense, like the conditions are like are hospital-like, but it's not a hospital.
Right.
So that's the good thing about it. So it's I think I'm getting fitter.
Well, that's what we all want to hear. Well, Maliki, you couldn't make it to the QED in Astoria on Thursday, but I have a little cardboard cutout of you, and I had you taped to one of the mic stands, so you were there in spirit. And we're going to play every Sunday that we're on one of the stories that we do from the BQE to the QED. And this one is by Marion Fontana. And she lost her firefighter husband, one of the 343 that died that day on 9/11. And she tells an unbelievable story of love, lost, dating, and Katz's Deli. Now, how do you get all that together? Well, we're going to play that clip now. When we come out, we're going to tell you more about that. And then eventually we're going to head out to California to speak with the Bronx bookie, Billy O'Connor. But right now we go to Marion.
So I met my husband in college. I was a freshman. I was 18 years old. I was a music major, and he was a sculpture major. We dated for 10 years, and then we got married. Our wedding invitation said, "At last." And Dave chose, he had become a firefighter, a job that he loved even more than sculpting. And so he chose September 11th because he wanted to tell everyone he got married on 9/11. It was a beautiful day, and 2 years later we had our son, Aiden. And then on September 11th, 2001, our eighth wedding anniversary, we all know what happened. My life turned upside down, backwards, and round and round. And it was my son's second day of kindergarten. I had a two-month shiva with friends and neighbors and everyone coming into my house because we didn't know what was going on. 2 weeks after 9/11, they tried to close my husband's firehouse. So I had been a teacher in the neighborhood for 8 years. I had a lot of students, and all my kids came with their parents making signs, and we managed to keep the firehouse open. And that protest threw me in the unwitting spotlight for almost every event that happened at 9/11. The firefighters started calling me about the site, saying they weren't checking the trucks for body parts well enough. So I formed a not-for-profit to give families information. I was working with medical examiners, politicians, going to meetings, going to Washington. I was overwhelmed, to say the least. And my friends, my fellow widows, had started dating. And I couldn't even think about dating. My world was spinning so fast with single parenting and funerals and meetings. I didn't even consider it. But my friends just kept calling, going, "Marion, you know, you really need to go out on dates. It's been 2 years." And I'm like, okay. Now, I met my husband when I was 18. I'd never dated. I don't even know how to date. I don't even know what you do. So my friends are calling. They're checking their Rolodexes. That's what they were called back then. And they would find somebody. And there was always a caveat. He's a great guy. He's an alcoholic. He's a great guy. He's a workaholic. He's been divorced 5 times. He's separated. He lives in the basement that he shares with the house with his wife. I heard it all. And I would get excited because they'd tell me this great thing, and I was always waiting for the but. And my friend Dee Dee was relentless. She called every week. She's like, I found this great guy, Drew. He's perfect for you. He has a little disease. And I'm like, I said, what is it? And she said alopecia. And I'm like, oh, is it fatal? And she's like, no, you lose all your hair. You can't grow hair. I'm like, oh, that's good. Maybe I'll catch it on my face. And then he called and said he didn't want to date a public figure. And he was uncomfortable. So that was that. And then she calls again. I found a really sweet guy. He's a journalist. He's smart. He's creative. He's funny. He's a little short. I'm like, okay, how short? She's like, well, how tall is Aiden? And Aiden's my 7-year-old son at the time. So I did go out with him, by the way. But I had to talk to him like this. It was really short. Anyway, so there's, you know, websites. There's no dating sites at this point. And my friend tells me about a thing called Nerve.com, which is kind of a magazine online that in the back has these personal ads. And so you have to fill out this huge thing. They ask you everything. What's your favorite color? Where do you want to travel? And I fill it all out, and I get a call from a guy named John. And we start talking, and he's actually really nice. He's an actor. Turns out we went to high school together, but he was in the same year. And so we decide to make a date. So this is going to be my first date. And he picks Katz's Deli, because one of the questions on this monumental thing we had to fill out was, if you could be anywhere right now, where would you be? And I put Katz's Deli, eating a corned beef and rye, of course. And so we choose to meet, and it's hot. It's August hot, and I am so nervous. I haven't been on a date since I'm maybe 16, and I kind of feel that old. I'm that insecure. I'm like, oh my God, I'm standing in front of the store. He's late. So he calls, and he's like, I'm really sorry. The F train's not running. I'm going to take the crosstown bus. And I'm like, okay, and I'm pacing back and forth. I'm trying not to sweat too much. And a bus pulls up and stops, and it goes, and I'm like, oh, no. I start a monologue in my head. I'm like, oh, my God, what if he's, oh, my God, what if he has issues? What if he's handicapped? I don't know if I can take care of someone. I start spinning. And sure enough, the guy comes up, and he has a disability. He's got two canes, and he comes up to me, and he says hello. And I say hi, and, you know, he's very friendly, and he's very nice. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, it's a cafeteria. Do I hold the tray? Should I not hold the tray? How do we do this? And he was so comfortable. I'm the one freaking out. I go get my corned beef and rye. He's like, hey, you want a brown soda? I'm like, sure. And we sit down. And I'm just so flustered. He's like, what's wrong? And I said, well, I don't know how to say this. I don't mean to be rude, and I don't want to seem shallow, but I didn't know you had a disability. And he's like, oh, okay. Well, I got hit by a cab, he tells me. I don't think it was John. I hope it wasn't John. He got hit by a cab. He broke both legs, both hips, and he was waiting for a titanium hip replacements. He was so young, they didn't want to give him the old ones because they'd wear out. I said, oh, okay. And he said, you know, and by the way, you didn't tell me your situation. I was like, what do you mean? And he said, I Googled you. Now, this is 2002. I didn't even know what Google was. I'm like, what do you mean? And he's like, I Googled you. And of course, I'm like, oh, I'm going to go home and Google myself. I don't even know what that is. It sounds dirty. And so he's like, there's a lot of information about you. I'm very sorry about your husband, but you didn't tell me any of that. And I said, you know what, you're right, and I'm sorry, and I should have told you. I wanted one night to just go out, not talk about 9/11, not talk about firefighters, not talk about any of it. I just wanted to have a date. And right when I say that, I swear to God, this happened. I can't make this up. There's a thump, and the guy two tables over collapses onto the ground, and someone's like, someone call 911. Everyone starts opening their phones. The wife is opening his shirt. Dave taught me that if you call a firehouse directly, it's better because, you know. And so I know 33 engines around the corner, so I call them directly. Like, hey, it's Marion Fontana. I'm at Katz's Deli. There's a guy having a heart attack. So 2 minutes later, they come clanking in. And there's all these young guys I don't recognize, but I know a couple of the guys. They start, you know, giving him oxygen, you know. administering. They didn't do CPR. He was actually okay. They were bringing him to the hospital. His color was returning. Everyone's relieved. And then they recognize me like, Marion, hey, what are you doing here? And I'm like, oh my, not only am I still terrified, but I'm also don't remember names very well. And so I'm just throwing out Irish men. Hey, Dennis, Sean, Brian, how are you? And then they come over and they start talking to me and I introduce them to John. And it's, you know, he's, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm actually on a date. And they're like, oh, can't get rid of us, huh? You know, he's just making jokes. And so finally they leave and we sit down and we're eating our sandwiches. And I said, yeah, wow. And he's like, well, I'd love to see you again because that is the best date I've ever had. And that's the end of my story. So thanks.
Well, Malachi, that was Marion Fontana. She has a book out called The Widow's Walk, a memoir of 9/11. So, Malachi, that was one of the stories you missed on Thursday. We talk about 9/11 and the 343 firefighters that were killed that day, but here's a real personal story about what happened afterwards. You there, Malachi?
How's you doing?
Yeah. Did you get to hear that, Malachi?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, very, in one way, heart-wrenching, but then the perils of dating. And if you want to hear more stories, I will be playing a story a week here. And we've partnered up with the Fortune Society. Kaz Torres told a great story. It's the Fortune Society. I'll say a good story. So we're going to be playing that very shortly. So every month we're going to have somebody from the Fortune Society. And as a matter of fact, in May, David Rothenberg, the founder, will be telling a story at QED. But that's a couple of months down the line. If you want to get tickets for March 14th, we're going to have Maureen Lagan, stand-up comedian. She has a one-man play about her father as the garbage man. Annie Lancelotto, the lesbian lion of the Bronx. She'll be coming into Queens telling her story. Brendan Fay, founder of the St. Pat's for All Parade. And Marsha Loughran will be, she's a nurse in Queens. And she's going to tell you how to date a drug addict. Could be very good information for our audience there. And if you want to get tickets, because the shows have been selling out, it's QEDHistoria.com. One word, QEDHistoria.com. And look for March 14th from the BQE to the QED. And I'm proud to say I'm talking to you from Dublin. And I will not be stuck on the BQE, at least for a week, as I head up to dear old Donegal tomorrow. But you know what, Malachi? The talk, it's even in this country, it's about the Super Bowl. And yeah, it's about, yeah. And to me, it's not even a game anymore. It's gambling. And there's two betting apps that have taken over the world, DraftKings and FanDuel. And we're going to go to our friend who we've had in the studio when we used to get into Brooklyn, Billy O'Connor, originally born in County Cork, came to the Bronx as a young kid. Was on the fire department, and he had a side hustle. Could be a dangerous side hustle, but he was a bookie in the Bronx, in the South Bronx, to be more specific. So what I want to do now, Malachi, is play, to me, the best song ever written about money, and it's by the OJs. And I'll never forget when I was part of NATO, of which Trump now wants to call for invasions of different European countries. I was stationed in Germany when this song was out, and it was up for a Grammy. And I remember just laying in the barracks, a 40-man bay, and everyone had these gigantic stereos. And this song would be blasting along with the rest of the album, For the Love of Money. So, Malachi, we're going to play this song. We come out, we're going to speak to the Bronx bookie. He's got a book out called Confessions of a Bronx Bookie, Billy O'Connor. But this song here really reflects about what today is. And forget about the game and forget about what the score is going to be. There's only one thing that matters today, and it's this song.
Well, John, before we...
Yeah.
Money, 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 money.
The OJs. And Malachi, I'm sorry to cut you. I'm sorry to cut you off there, but Malachi, what did you want to say?
Oh, I was going to say that I didn't. There are a number of folks here listening today, so I want to make sure that we acknowledge that they
that they are taking great care of me only. There's only a few hundred people here.
Well, hey, we got to use whatever hook we can, Malachi, and, to get you, as I say, back in the saddle. And that saddle happens to be the motorized wheelchair that you have next to the bed.
Indeed,
so we'll have to go around the place.
And nice folks, and I'm delighted. And all, but the other thing, which John, which was that the. That for hundreds of years, a few hundred years, the betting was called in Ireland was called bookmaking, and I don't know why it was, and young folks there had to serve apprenticeships, and it was a very highly respectable occupation. Oh yes, he was a bookmaker. That's what, and I don't know why it was called bookmaking.
Well, you know what, Malachi? We might find out. I'm in Dublin. You're in upstate New York, but now we're heading out to California, where we bring in our friend that we get every, because now the show's on Sunday, and it's Super Bowl Sunday. We have our friend Billy O'Connor, and Billy. Can you give us your background, how you got involved with bookmaking? I know you were on the fire department. You spent your career on that, and this was your side hustle. But how did you get involved in being a bookie in the South Bronx?
Quick anecdote before I go there. I just heard Malachi. I hope you're feeling better, my friend. I just heard Malachi talk about bookmaking in Ireland. When I first went to Ireland and I saw all the shops called turf accountants, they called them. The bookmaker was legal.
Yes.
Which I guess Ireland was ahead of its time, because now it's legal over here. You know, they're advertising on television. But I became a bookie, John. Well, let me give you a quick bio, just so the listeners out there know what the hell I am. I was born in County Cork. I came here by boat in 1950 to Ellis Island. Grew up in the Bronx, did Vietnam. After Vietnam, I was on the FDNY for 20 years. After 9/11, I kind of went down to Keys and got drunk for about 4 or 5 years. I sobered up. I went to the University of Florida, got a degree in journalism, and written 5 books now, 3 of them with co-written with my podcast partner and producer Frank Pace, 4-time Emmy nominated producer. And then I wrote a book called Confessions of a Bronx Bookie, which is my first book. About bookmaking. And then I wrote a book with Frank Pace called Lamar's Gamble about corruption in the NFL. But I became a bookmaker because I was a compulsive gambler. Couldn't stop gambling, John. And I owed everybody. I mean, I had banked out of my credit cards. I owed every bookie, and I knew a lot of bookies, pal. And I said, you know what? If I can't beat them, I'll join them. So I got together with 2 of my friends. I think the first year we had 100 customers when I was bookmaking in the Bronx. But it was a different game in those days. You know, we had to do all the work ourselves. It wasn't computerized. And I said to my partners, I said, you know, how many winnings do you think we're going to have at the end of the year? We got 100 customers. One guy said 8. I figured 12. One guy said 4. At the end of the year, we had no winners. Following year, we had 300 customers. At the end of the year, no winners. Next year, we had 500 customers. End of the year, no winners. It's impossible to win betting sports. That 10% is going to eat you up every time. They don't bet now. They advertise it on TV, and some of the bets are 15%. Sometimes you got to lay 115 to win 100, or 120 to win 100. And everything's computerized. It's artificial intelligence, because you can bet during the game. As the game's going on, the odds change every 30 seconds. It's incredible. In-game betting, they call it.
But Billy, I just know I come from a neighborhood in Queens, Middle Village, where there you could say a couple of bookies around. You can't just set up that, because there's certain people in the neighborhood, i.e. the mob, would not look kindly upon you setting up your own bookie shop. How were you allowed to do that, and did they try to muscle in on you?
Well, back in the day when I was doing this, you know, like back in the 70s, There was, you know, if guys would tell you this is their territory, you can't take action. I knew a guy who was hooked up, you know, a friend of mine who used to work with me before I got on the fire department with the Teamsters when I was delivering for Sears. his brother was hooked up. So he sort of told guys, you know, we were small potatoes. You know, I told him we only had 10 customers, you know. And he sort of squashed any grief that I might have got. But now everything is, I mean, we had to have two different apartments, forward phones to an empty apartment, change our numbers, especially before the Super Bowl, because the Super Bowl is the biggest day, used to be the biggest day for bus in gambling, because you bust somebody else, so everybody bets the Super Bowl. So the way it works is if they bust you on Super Bowl Sunday, you're writing four times the amount of tickets, three times the amount of tickets you usually write on a Sunday. So now they can take a bow and say, look, we just busted a $2 million gambling operation, you know, because they multiply it by 52 weeks, you know, and say this is what the gambling operation was doing. So it's totally different now. Everything is offshore. Nobody has to do the work. The work is done computerized. All the bookmakers got to do, which is the hardest part of bookmaking, is collect, you know, which is the hardest part of it, but that's what he's got to do. Everything else is done computerized. It's astounding.
Now, DraftKings
and stuff like that being advertised on television.
Is it all about trust?
I'm sorry?
Trust. You have to...
It wasn't legal
for years here, but you had to trust that the bookie, that was interesting. And do you have an idea what's called bookmaking?
Well, when you're taking book, you got to write everything down. We did it in triplets, Malik.
Yeah,
We had to write everything on carbon, you know. Back in the day, the slips were like 4-inch by 4-inch. And every time the phone rings, you write a different slip. So yes, a guy could call you eight times, you know, but you'll have eight different slips for him. And it was always in triplets, so you could take the work and triple check it. You go in separate rooms or go in separate places and do the work individually. And this way, any mistakes will pop up before you give the figure to the guy weekly, you know. But now it's all done, boom, instantly. It's incredible.
You know what, Billy?
Did the bookie himself ever go to jail?
Back in the day, they did. They had what was called KGB, oddly enough, the initials. But it was known gambler. And if you got a KGB, the first time it's a slap on the wrist, second time it's a slap on the wrist. The third time, it was a felony. I don't know if it was a felony, but you could definitely, it was a felony. Third time KGB, it was a felony, you could go to jail. But it was a kind of, what they looked at in them days, as a harmless, it wasn't drugs,
right.
It wasn't robbery.
Wasn't,
you know,
crime,
so it was like,
at all.
Yes, it was, yeah. But they bust you, you know, and confiscate whatever they could back in the day. But now, I mean, you see it advertised on television, Malachi. It's remarkable to me. It's almost like you can make the analogy to marijuana, like how it used to be so clandestine, people would be going to jail. Now they're selling it in California. You go to any tobacco store just about and get magic mushrooms. It's insane. You know, and then I see bookmakers advertising on TV. It blows me away.
Yeah, but Billy, I want to say, getting busted by, say, Joe Hines, when he used to do his big press conference about busting. Your other problem was, and I've seen it at some of my locals in Queens, I used to hang out at a bar on Woodhaven Boulevard, and he got robbed the night before of all the Super Bowl box money that he had. Now, did you have to worry about the money you were carrying, and were you packing, or did you have to have someone that was armed with you? Because I know of a couple of places that they have to be so careful, because you're talking cash. It could be hundreds of thousands of dollars, and somebody with a ski mask and a 9mm is coming down into your club or coming into your bar, and he's looking for that box money that you see behind every bar in New York City, you know, with the 100 points for this and how many points for that. Did you have to worry about getting robbed when you were carrying money?
Well, you know what? When you're selling out boxes, it seems like the bigger you make the pool, the easier it is to sell it out. You know, $1,000 a box pool sells out easier than a $20 box, it seems like to me anyway. But in my case, most of the money is either down in the safe or it's already in the bank because people have been paying for it all year. Now, in my case, I had two choices. I had two different saloons. Come Super Bowl Sunday, my biggest concern was making sure I got the money to give back to the Super Bowl pool, because I would spend it on electric bills and everything else during the year. You know, I'd be using the money, and then I had to scramble to make sure I could pay everybody off, because you always got to pay. You got to make sure everything's done on the up and up with pools. And it's the same thing with Malachi was talking about with trust. Well, with bookmaking, the bookmaker always pays. It's like Vegas. You got to be out of your mind not to pay because you can't lose. Bookmaking is like it's guaranteed money. So you always pay. But your players, I mean, sometimes the players could be betting with four or five other bookmakers. And they could be in the hole of you, and all of a sudden you find, you know, they can't pay you. And then there's three or four other guys they're in the hole, too, and now you got to figure out how to get your money, which is, you're not a gangster or a wise guy. It's that's a matter of trust for sure. You got to know your players, and you got to put a limit on them, you know. But, no, I wasn't too concerned about getting held up. I never really had a lot of cash on me. Right. Too many fast women and slow horses, you know.
Well, you know what, Bill? You're talking about DraftKings and FanDuel. Everybody knows those words now. But there's also something else with gambling, and it's called a betting service that you actually pay someone who, he isn't making money, but he's going to advise you how to bet, almost like what we're doing with you. What do you think about these betting services?
The betting services. Yeah, let's put it this way. If a guy could make money on a betting service, if a guy knew who was going to win, he wouldn't have a betting service. He'd just sit in bed drinking champagne with high-priced company, you know what I mean, and just pick winners. But I tell you a quick story about betting service. My partner, Blinky, who was my partner in a bookmaking operation, he was a compulsive gambler as well as me, which is why he became a bookie. Anyway, he tells me one day, even though we're taking tons of action every week, and he sees that nobody wins, he's still betting $4,000 or $5,000 a game and then losing. He comes to me one day. That's it. He says, I'm done losing. He says, look at this. He says, I'm going to call this betting service. They got their game of the century. They only release it once a year. I said, listen to yourself. It's the game of the century. But they release it once a year. Listen to yourself. He says, yeah, they charge $500. I said, these things are scams, man. What are you, crazy? They're scams. He said, I don't care. I'm doing it. So he gets on the phone with the guy. $500 he puts on his credit card. And the guy says, now listen, real clandestinely, you know. This is our game of the century. You can't tell anybody about this game. We do a lot of research for this game. He says, that's why you're paying $500. Blinky says, look, all right, I get it. What's the game? The guy says, all right. He says, San Francisco. Blinky says, whoa. San Francisco. Wow. Even though Montana's out? The guy says, Montana's out? He says, you freaking shyster. Are you kidding me? My money. No, they're really, they're just a scam. Nobody can pick. You can't win. Believe me, I tell you, we have 500 customers. Nobody wins. It's percentages. It's 10% is a, math is a, you know, it's a pure equation. 10%. Going to happen 10% of the times, you're going to lose. Well, that's it. The juice kills you.
Malachi, did you ever do any gambling in your bars, Malachi, the Bells of Hell or any of the bars?
Well, they wouldn't. They would be. I suppose not anything. No, we didn't really, to be right. Straight about it. I wouldn't. I never understood it. Because the whole thing of the mathematics of it totally escaped me, and the way a bookmaker can calculate what is going to be, how much, where, when, and fractions. That was the other thing about it, fractions, yeah. And I don't understand them. So,
well, you know
anyway,
what, Malachi? Malachi, you talk about fractions. Kansas City was getting 3 points about a week ago. I think it's down to 2.5. That half point, Billy, is huge, isn't it? Maybe you can explain the difference between a 2.5 and a 3-point spread that's going to Kansas City.
Well, here's the deal. The hook, they call it the hook, the half a point. And the half a point is really, really significant when you're using numbers like 2.5 or 3. The numbers that games tend to fall on that are important to a bookmaker are 7 and 8, 10 and 11, 3 and 4. Those are the numbers that come up. A game like this, it opened up like I didn't see a three out there at all. I think it opened up at 2.5, went down to 2. Then it went to 1.5. Then it's back up to 2. And it's been 2 now steady all week. But again, a number like 2, 1.5, 2.5, those are bookmakers' numbers. Very rarely. I mean, it could happen. But very rarely do games fall on 1 or 2 points. They usually fall on 3. I think numbers like 20% of football games fall on 3. Or won by 3 points or lost by 3 points. So those numbers are bookmakers' numbers. They play with them. But that hook, that half a point, is really significant because there's no way you can score a half a point. You know, that doesn't happen in football. So when you see a game that's 4.5, say the Giants are 4.5-point underdog to Dallas. Well, now you take that 4.5, and if the Giants kick a field goal, they're 2 scores ahead. That's 7.5 points. That hook is enormous. Because you can't score a half a point. But now things have changed a little bit with the go-for-2 thing. You know, that's happened a lot now. When teams score, instead of just taking the automatic, which is not automatic anymore because they moved it back a little bit, the extra point, they'll go for 2, and that changes all the numbers significantly, especially in the pools. You know, because if you used to get a number like 5-5 or 2-5, 8-8, you just tear up your ticket. You got no shot. But now with all these combinations, they change everything because of the 2-point score. You know, a lot of guys go for 2. A lot of teams go for 2, I'm sorry.
Now,
so
Billy,
the hook is significant.
I'm just looking up here about bets that can be made. I just want to run through them and see, would you ever take any bets? Okay, here's one. Will a player leave the game and not return due to a concussion, right? What type of barbecue sauce are you going to use? Let me just go down here. How many players will have pass attempts? Numbers of beers sold. How many times will Taylor Swift be shown throughout the game? Right? Let me go down here. How many times will the chains be...
I'd love to know what the over and under on that is. What is the over and under on how many times Taylor Swift will be seen throughout the game?
Let me go up here and look here. It says the under and over is 5.5, 5.5.
Unbelievable.
It's got to be over. The guy here says pick under. There's no way she's only being shown 5 times. You got to bet over.
They'll have her on TV 5.5 times before she gets out of the limbo.
I know. You would never take a bet like that. What you as they say, strictly business. You weren't into these silly bets.
It's like a crap table, John. You go up to a crap table. They got all kinds of specialty bets. You know, they got the hard ways. They got this and that. Every time a bookmaker gives you an extra opportunity to bet, it's a sucker bet. They're not giving you an opportunity to bet unless they're shaving at least 10-15%. And especially bets, they usually take more than 10%. It's usually a 15% shave. So the more opportunities you got to lose, the more opportunities the house is going to give you. You know you're not getting the better of it, you know. So I don't even look at specialty bets.
All right.
But I know guys that do it, you know, it's about entertainment. You know, listen, I'm not telling people don't bet. You want to bet. And I'm not going to be one of these guys, bet responsibly, you know. No, here's the deal. Bet knowing you can't win. So bet not to lose. Don't bet to try and make money because you ain't never going to make money. So use it like entertainment. Like you're going out to Vegas, you bring $500 with you, $1,000. You say, look, if I lose this, so what? And bet minimal, you know, because you ain't going to win. So if you want to have fun, if I could find a place to take $1 a game, I would bet $1 a game just to show if I can win or not. Because I know I can't win, so it's just limit your losses. Realize that you can't win.
Now, Billy, with the money being so big on this and the betting so big, can a game be rigged? Say, a shanking of a field goal kicker goes wide to the right, looks a bit suspicious, but then he covers the bet, the spread. Can with the money being so big, and if you're in the Super Bowl, can you fix a Super Bowl?
Well, you know, that goes back to an old adage. When you say fixing games in the NBA, football, whatever, you're right. The money's so big now, how much money will you have to give a guy to throw a game? So you've got to get to the weakest link in the money pool. Like, for example, years ago, they were fixing over and unders. And I know this for a fact. They were doing it. And they got to the timekeepers. And they got to the timekeepers in 3 or 4 cities. Now, timekeepers don't make the kind of money the players do. Now, if you're going to fix a football game in this day and age, and believe me, some games, not all games, but at least one game a week is in the toilet. At least. And the easiest way to do it would be the officials. Because there's holding on every single play in the NFL. I don't even know what defensive holding in the interior line is. I mean, I've seen that call in crucial situations, defensive holding. You say, there's holding, that's what they do. They grab you, they try and throw you to the ground. It's holding, every play. So if you get to an official, that would be the easiest way. But can it be fixed? The book, me and my friend partner Frank Pace wrote, Lamar's Gamble, not only shows you how it can be done, it tells you documented players that felt like they played in fixed games, and one of them was a Super Bowl. So, yeah, it can be done. And when the amount of money, anything can be done. Look, what's on the level with America, really? Let's be honest here. Politics ain't on the level. Catholic Church ain't on the level. Any place there's large amounts of money, there's going to be corruption. It's that simple. And, you know, yeah, it can be done. It's not easy, but it can be
Billy,
done.
And Billy, just quickly. Billy, quickly. It's coming up in a couple of hours, and I wanted from a gambler's point of view about covering the spread. Who wins tonight, betting-wise, San Francisco or KC?
Well, San Francisco, KC, you can look at that game a thousand different ways, a thousand different people can look at it, and they're going to tell you basically it's a coin flip. I mean, it's a toss-up. Two really great teams. San Francisco, I think, is a better team. Kansas City, I think, has a better quarterback. But it's a toss-up. My thing, if I was betting today, if I was a gambling man, John, I bet the under 47.5. I think it's going to be a low-scoring game. Right. I don't think that San Francisco is going to put it all on Brock Purdy's shoulder, and they want to keep the ball out of Kansas City's hands, but they're going to try and run the ball, keep the ball, and I think it could be a low-scoring game. That's my guess. But you know what? But I don't know nothing.
You know nothing. I don't want to know nothing. Hey, Malachi, thanks for doing it.
One question is...
go ahead.
What the brand of chewing gum do they play? The players chew? What's the
bet? Well, you could probably bet on it, Malachi. No. I don't know what it is, but...
we could probably get a line on it, Malachi.
It's very important.
Yeah. Well, Malachi, we're going to go out with a blues number by B.B. King called The Gambler's Blues. I'm heading into Dublin City Center, but I will be back in New York for next Sunday. Malachi, I'll see you when I come back. I'll come up for a quick visit, and we'll try to make an escape and get you out of there.
And now, what are you betting that you'll get back on next week?
I'm betting on Aer Lingus to take me back, and it looks like a short bet. Thanks, Billy.
Thanks,
Malachi.
Feel
better, my brother. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, we're so happy to have you with us. We're going to do our best to try to move you tonight. If you like the blues, I think we can. much. Thank you. I don't know what love is, but I think I must have it bad. Yeah, you know I don't know what love is, people. Whatever it is enough to drive old me mad.
Good morning. You're tuned to 99.5 FM, WBAI in New York. Radio Free Aaron with John McDonough and Malachi McCourt came to you live over listener-sponsored, non-commercial Pacifica Radio, WBAI in New York. Coming up at 12 noon is WBAI Playhouse. Stay tuned.
Hey, Maya, guess what? Kylie Jenner's new lip kit is out.
Mercedes, are you really going to spend your money on that garbage?
It's not garbage. She finally released a color I've been looking for, ginger.
Mercedes, you can do so much more.
Like what?
You can donate it to WBAI and become a BAI buddy.
What's a BAI buddy?
A BAI buddy is someone who signs up to make a monthly donation to WBAI. Once you join, you'll receive a BAI buddy card and a free tote bag. The BAI buddy card allows you to become eligible for on-air giveaways and receive discounts at local shops, museums, and venues. And that's not even the best part. You can get all of this and more by donating as little as $10 a month.
That sounds amazing. I want to become a BAI buddy. How can I join?
You can sign up at WBAI.org.
WBAI.org? Got it. Thanks. And you're right, I can do a lot more at WBAI than with Kylie Jenner.
It's all about supporting a medium that keeps it 100.
Don't want to use the website or the call center to contribute to WBAI? That's okay. Please feel free to send your check or money order to WBAI, 3rd floor, 388 Atlantic Avenue, Brooklyn, New York, 11217. Please make your check or money order out to Pacifica-WBAI. We thank you for your donation and hope that you will spread the word and tell your friends. And please keep on listening.
WBAI's local station board, the Pacifica Foundation Board, responsible for local management and operations, is holding its next regular meeting on Wednesday, February 14th at 7 p.m. The LSB expects to be populating subcommittees and task forces at both the national and the local board level. Again, the LSB meeting is Wednesday, February 14th at 7 p.m. The meeting will be held through the Zoom remote meeting service and is accessible to the public and includes an opportunity for public comment. The fastest and easiest way to join the meeting is by using the link on the Pacifica calendar at kpftx.org and on the WBAI website. You can also gain access by calling 929-205-6099. That's 929-205-6099. And enter this meeting ID, 922-457-2995. The meeting ID again, 922-457-2995. And as if that wasn't enough numbers, we also have a password. It's 995, like WBAI's frequency. So it's 995-995-99. Do you have to contribute to WBAI to access the meeting? No, but we certainly need you to. Thank you.
Extinction Diaries. A small and shy Florida grasshopper sparrow born and raised in captivity is flying with tiny transmitters so scientists can track and quickly learn what is pushing the bird towards extinction. The transmitting sparrow's mission is to save the 30 last breeding pairs in the wild. Florida grasshopper sparrows have been declining for decades, but in 2000, their numbers dropped sharply and continued to do so. The source of their rapid loss remains elusive. Once the captive-raised transmitting birds mate with the wild ones, scientists hope a more complete picture of the grasshopper sparrow's activities will lead to solutions and survival. The sparrow almost vanished as Florida real estate consumed the once vast prairie. Now they may be the next bird to go extinct in the U.S. if remedies are not quickly discovered. Scientists